From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Hey guys, Stephen Conway from The Spiel here. I know I'm a couple episodes late and I apologize for that, but I wanted to reach out and send you a little note saying congratulations for reaching 100 episodes of The Dice Men Cometh. Tremendous achievement. I think it takes somebody who's done this maybe 10 years almost to the day to appreciate how much time and effort and preparation goes into all that you do. I think you guys are such great ambassadors for the hobby. I think your passion for gaming and for what we goofballs love about the hobby comes through so loud and clear. And most importantly, your show's just fun. It's really a great listen, and I can't wait to see what the next 100 episodes hold for you. Maybe someday we'll get to sit down and play some games together. That's certainly on my bucket list. Congratulations, Mark, Garth, Leon. Keep up the great work. Here's to 100 more. Spiel on, guys.
That was Stephen Conway from The Spiel, and look, very kind of him to send us that message to celebrate our 100th episode, which was 2 episodes ago, because this is episode 102 on the 21st of January here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You are, of course, with The Dice Men Cometh. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
I'm Leon.
And Leon, what have we got coming up tonight?
Tonight on the show, we have got quite a lot of what we've been playing.
Because
we've
been
playing a lot, and we've been playing all day today. And I've been half asleep for most of it. And then we've got plenty of Kickstarter news, as well as some iOS stuff. And then various different information about competitions around town, as well as our big competition, which is ending soon.
Yeah.
And also the 10x10 challenge that we have been challenged to over Facebook, we're going to have a quick talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other bibs and bobs as well.
So, as normal, we've got too much to talk about, so we'll see how we go. But yes, Let's kick us off with a song, hey, Mark? Like a song, Mark.
Yeah, the music.
A song.
Some woo.
102 episodes of professionalism.
With some sort of guitar, maybe, and
no?
Drums. Is drums too much to ask?
There we go.
Yeah, it's always serious with Morrissey here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. That was, of course, The Smiths with their girlfriend in a coma. And look, it was funny, really, because I did have, believe it or not, an Iron Maiden track queued up then to play. And then a little bit of fat finger button mashing caused slight problem. And let's skip on to the next track.
I think your eyes were a little bit out of focus from all the intense gaming we've been doing
today.
I
think you may be right, Garth.
Yeah, so we've had a not an epic day of gaming because we've played multiple games, but we did start at midday and we finished about 30 minutes ago so that we could come to the studio. So, Leon, would you like to kickstart this with what we started with playing?
Kickstarter?
Yes. I got myself promptly out of bed and set up the gaming table after about 2.5 hours of sleep from my night shift. So I don't even know where I am at the moment, but that's fine. So what we did is we played one of my favorite new games, which is Mission Red Planet. It is a 2-6 player worker placement kinda game published by Fantasy Flight, in which players take control of mission leaders, sending teams of astronauts to Mars to mine for its precious natural resources. Sources, even.
Nah, resources.
Yeah, that's fine. Each round, players select from one of the 9 identical cards that everybody has, and then they secretly pick one, and then we start a countdown from 10, just like a real rocket ship launching into space. And when it hits your number, you flip over your card. Once it's revealed, you do the actions on your card, which normally are putting various spacemen into spaceships and what have you. There's lots of different things that you can pick from. There's the scientist, explorer, there's a saboteur, there's a pilot. There's a whole lot of people that want to get your guys to Mars.
Yes.
Or not, as the case may be.
Exactly right. Now, this game is by the Brunos.
Yeah, Bruno Faduti, Bruno Cathala,
to
huge... Well, we're huge fans of them. They're not huge fans of the show. But we did have Bruno Cathala on. We interviewed him once, and Bruno Faduti even liked a tweet we did today about this game. So lots of Bruno happening with this game.
Yes, yes. It was a very lovely and proud moment. Yeah, so what you're looking to do in this game, like I said, is go find different resources like ice and cool-looking crystals and whatnot to get yourself victory points. I know that's a new concept for some games, victory points, but that's what you're doing. as well as each person has a secret mission, which is more often than not control this certain area of Mars or mine these certain resources and things like that. The reason it sounds relatively simplistic is because it is.
Yeah.
But it looks very pretty.
It does.
And there's lots of fun to play. And you can blow up spaceships and send people to Lost in Space.
And I've realized I think the reason Leon wanted to start with this game is because as he'd only just woken up, it had nice, big, bright pieces, so he was able to notice them on the board. And because he's played it so many times, he knows what every one of the characters does and their number without even looking at the cards. So it was a game that you probably played in autopilot. He then made the mistake of saying, I've played it 5 times and only ever lost one.
Well, that didn't work out too well for me in the end. I need to mention that this game originally did come out over 10 years ago in 2005. But this new re-released version, it now adds a sixth player, where previously there was only 5. In the rulebook, there is a two-player variant, which I must admit I haven't had a look at yet, but I've been told works quite well. There's new action and discovery cards, which go into the deck, which change the way the game plays and way different people can score points and all that other kind of jazz. And there's an interesting space on the board called Phobos, which is a moon of Mars, that was not in the original game, but was actually in the rules and the concept and everything for the original game. And then for some reason, they just took it out. When re-releasing it, they thought, we'll put that back in because we probably shouldn't have taken that out in the first place. Yeah. So that adds extra bit of depth to it as well, having a moon circling around Mars that you can pretty much drop astronauts from onto Mars in those necessarily places when you're trying to get control of those resources, which I've said.
Look, I really like the combination of the cards where you're selecting your special ability each turn, much like, I guess coming from Bruno Faiduti, I think he adopted the Citadels type mechanic.
Yep.
Bruno Cathala obviously bringing in the worker placement aspect. And I like how it's a game of sort of, not two halves, but two parts where you've got the battle to get onto the spaceships and to get the spaceships to the right area. And then you've got the area control, majority ruling in Mars and moving your astronauts around. And then also the little tiles with the 1, 2, and 3 points, the different types of
resources.
Resources that you're trying to get. So it makes you think about, well, I really want to get lots here, but then this one's worth 3. And there's a lot going on there. But it doesn't take a long period of time. It doesn't overstay its welcome, I don't think.
Not at all.
Only being, was it 10 rounds?
Yep, 10 rounds, which I taught to you lads, and we played in, I think, within an hour.
Yeah, it was pretty close to that. And look, I really like this kind of game where you don't sit around for half an hour learning it, and you're able to go in pretty quickly, because essentially your turn will consist of everyone in secret choosing one of their 9 action cards, so you're only choosing 1 card each. You then count down from 9 and you will play your card in order from highest down to lowest number.
In the original version, they actually count it up.
Okay.
From 1 to 10, which is so weird considering you think of the theme of it. You're counting down to launch into space. But apparently people were going 1, 2. Hang on, I think we've got this wrong, lads.
Exactly.
We've mass produced a game that's just not right.
Damn. So then once you've all chosen your cards and then you've revealed them in turn, almost all the cards will basically allow you to place an astronaut into a rocket. Now, your rocket is, there's 3 always at the start of a round. There's always 3 rockets going to 3 generally different destinations that will fit a certain number of astronauts in them. And as soon as they're full or a special condition, they will launch.
It's actually 1 rocket per player.
Uh-huh.
So when you have 6 players, there's 6 rockets.
Oh, wow.
So there's lots of craziness going on.
That would be chaos.
I've only played it with up to 4 so far, but I'd be interested to get 6 onto the table.
Yeah, so the good thing I liked about the special abilities is you did have the ability to mess around with the launch, got rockets to launch early. You could destroy them, which was great if you were the saboteur. There was a lot of really unique abilities, but at the end of the day, you're just trying to get ultimately as many people onto the right areas of Mars, because Mars is divided into about 16 or so different areas?
About 10, maybe?
About 10, I think, 10? Something like that. About 8 on the outside, and I think 2 in the middle. Something to that effect, anyway.
And I think Fantasy Flight have done a great job with this modernising of a Euro that it probably would have been, I don't know, I'm guessing 2005, 2006, something like that. I did play the original probably, I think I worked out, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, just once. I played it with friend of the show, John, also known as Gandalf. And look, I have a memory of that game taking a long time, Although I did play it with John, and every game you play with John takes a long time. But I did enjoy it, but I really liked the reproduction, the graphic art, the design elements, everything flowed beautifully together. It looked like a modern game, and Fantasy Flight seemed to be doing a really great job of taking these Euro games, redesigning them, tweaking little bits maybe, but mostly just reproducing and making them smarter, making them prettier, making them easier to understand, which, given it's Fantasy Flight and we're talking about rules here, that's a bit of a conundrum.
Well, they have a game that by Fantasy Flight that you just understand and can play almost straight out of the box.
Exactly.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I was half dead when I explained the rules, and we still managed to get onto it.
Yeah.
Which is not too bad. And also in the original, they had, I think, little cubes to represent the astronauts.
Okay.
And everyone loves little blank cubes, but not as much as cool little like rubber astronaut men, which just look an absolute treat. And the thing about this game is that a lot of games I think that are simple, I don't really wish for expansions to come out, because sometimes when they're that simple, you just want them to be that simple.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I'd be more than happy if they brought out some new stuff for this, but who knows if they will or not.
So that's looking like three thumbs up for Mission Red Planet.
Well, look, I put it in a good gateway sort of entry game, because it does cover off on a lot of the mechanics that a lot of trickier games would have. You could quite easily play this with non-gamers as an introduction, which I think is great, but you play it again and again, and there's a hell of a lot of strategy to maximise it.
Yeah, I played it with my family on the weekend, who aren't strong into games except for when I bring one around, and they picked it up in 10 minutes and was fine.
Yeah. I don't get the steampunk. I don't know why steampunk and going to Mars is on there.
It's actually in the story. It's just like 1920s and the world is already running out of resources.
Oh.
They found ice on Mars, go there.
There you go.
Yeah, I probably should have read that part of the book, but yeah.
So we've been playing other games.
We have.
Not just today, Garth.
No, so we have been playing, and I do need to give a big shout out to Stonemaier Games, who are very kind and were able to send us a copy of Between Two Cities, which is designed by Ben Rossett, who also designed Brewcrafters, which is a great worker placement brewing game that we played quite a few times. Yes. So look, thanks to Stonemaier for sending us a copy. Now, this game only came out last year, and it was, like so many of the Stonemaier games, a mammoth Kickstarter success. This game, unlike a lot of their other games, Viticulture, Euphoria, The Upcoming Scythe, and so on, this game plays in about 25 to 30 minutes. Mm. It is a light filler kind of party style game because it plays between 1 and 7 people. And it's very, very easy to describe because it's a tile placement game where you're going to be building a city. But the catch is you're building a city with the players to your immediate left and to your immediate right. So it's a bit of a hodgepodge of competitive cooperation in that you're trying to figure out the best way for you as the player to score the most points. But you need to work as a team because it's also got that Reiner Knizia mechanic where the city that you score with the lowest number of points will be your final goal, your final score, which means you can't put all your eggs into one city basket and leave one beside. You've got to be really keeping an eye on them. So the way it works is that you'll have essentially a face-down pile of single square tiles. Each tile will represent one of the 6 different building types. You're going to take a first of all, it's played out over 3 rounds. You're going to grab 7 of those. You're going to choose 2 of them in secret and then put one down in each city. And then you pass those around very 7 Wonders style. You'll choose the couple of tiles that you think are going to be best. The first round goes round and round until those cards are depleted. Second round, you get to bring out the duplex tiles, which have 2 different building types on them. You just choose one of those for each city. That's the second round. And then the third round is exactly the same as the first, where you'll choose 7 of the tiles, put one in each of your city and go round and round, but it just goes round the circle the other direction. And that's why it plays so quickly, is because it has 3 rounds. In the building types, there's only 6 different ones. You've got shops, you've got factories, you've got offices, you've got parks, you've got taverns, and you've got houses. And all of them score slightly differently depending on where you put them in your city. So the shops, for example, you'll get more points the more of them you have in a straight line. The factories, you'll have more of them if your city has the most factories out of any city on the table. If you've got parks, you've got larger parks are good, but it's actually better to have a couple of smaller parks in your city because your city needs parks. If you've got taverns, they have 4 different types because you need to keep your people well fed. So there are drinking taverns. Mm. You've got to have them well rested because there are sleeping taverns. You've got to have them well fed, so there's food taverns, and then there's entertainment, there's a music tavern. So you've got to have all four of them to get maximum points. If you've got offices, the more of those you get, just the more points, but you get bonuses if offices are next to taverns, because everyone needs to have a bit of food or a drink or a sleep or a listen to music at the end of the day. And then your houses are worth more depending on all the different types of buildings you have in your city. So your houses, they just love the fact that they have lots of things to do in their little city. So they have jobs and they have all of that. It's a really simple, fun game. I like
it. Yeah, now I really enjoyed it, but this could definitely fall in the category of games I like but I suck at. Because I must admit, I struggled with that mechanic of I'm building two cities with two different people and then the lowest score is going to be my score. Because I sort of can't help but fall into, well, I seem to be doing better over here, so I'll keep doing better with that one.
Yep.
And I did dismally in every game that I played of this, but I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's a really great game. I think the fact that it is so easy to get out there, teach within a couple of minutes and get straight to the table is really, really good. I think the fact that it plays well from potentially one person, although I've not tried the solo variant, I'll have to give that to you, Mark, to give that a crack, up to seven. That's awesome. Look, the art, it's questionable. I don't know whether the art is to my particular style.
It's very, not, I don't know if photorealistic is right, but it's also a bit dark, and I don't mean dark in an evil way, just the images are muted and not bright.
Yeah,
I mean,
it doesn't, sort of it doesn't dull, pop off dull the board,
cities,
does it?
Between two dull cities.
Yeah, so look, I think it's a really great game. I think it's, again, like Mission Red Planet, great to be able to just get out on the table, teach and get non-gamers particularly into the hobby. The quality of the components is second to none, which is something we expect from Stonemaier. Yeah. So look, I'm very happy that we've had a chance to play this. The fact that we've been able to play it probably three or four times in the space of, you know, an hour and a half was absolutely fantastic.
And we played it in our local pub, got it out on the table, managed to get through a couple of games through it quite quickly.
Yep.
As always with these sort of games, you know, it draws a lot of looks when you're there at the pub. But plays quickly, plays easily, plays well. It's engaging. I have really enjoyed it. You know, apart from the art, I think it's a great winner. And yep. Thanks again to Stonemaier Games.
Exactly. And to have a game that can fit that many people where there is zero downtime, it's great.
Now, Leon, you haven't played this one, so you've got lots of games left to play. But you know what they say?
What?
There's no rest for the wicked.
Close our eyes for good. Indeed, that was Cage the Elephant with Ain't No Rest for the Wicked on the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. As we mentioned earlier, we had a big old game day today, and we didn't just play some of the new hotness, we played something which is a bit of a modern classic already. Mark, what was that game?
The game, Leon, was bom, 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 bom. Where's my background music when I need it? Tales of the Arabian Nights, where you are a hero or heroine in a story of adventure and wonder, just like those told by Scheherazade to her spellbound sultan. You will travel the land, seeking your own destiny and fortune. You will learn stories and gain wisdom to share with others. Will you be the first to fulfill your destiny? The next tale is yours to tell. Now, this is a truly epic game. Now, initially it came out in 1985, published by West End Games, but this version was the third edition that came out sometime in the mid-2000s.
2009.
That's right, late 2000s. And this was really something that Zev Slashinger from Slazinger from Z-Man Games really made his own. He had a great desire to bring this classic back to publication. And Zev and his team of developers spent a lot of time re-editing the over 3,000 paragraphs from the game, adding new paragraphs, making them all match up, making a lot of the stuff read easier and more sensibly, made the board look beautiful. The pieces are all very lovely. So they've really put a lot of love into this game, and it is a paragraph-driven storytelling game. So it's very much like a choose-your-own-adventure. So you have your character, and you get sent out on a quest out in the world, which really, the quest just gives you a bit of starting direction where to go, because you could wander aimlessly in the world. Let's face it, most of us do. but then you go out there and you have encounters. And when you have encounters, you encounter a thing. It might be a mad bull elephant or something. And you get to pick from a matrix of reactions. So you choose how you're going to react to the thing that you've encountered, which then leads you to a paragraph. And then in the paragraph, often there'll be a choice between if you've got no skills or if you've got some particular skills. So you get to choose three skills at the start of the game that could be things like weapon use or seduction or wisdom or wilderness lore, or there's a whole list of them. So you choose your skills. You're trying to get a combination of destiny and story points. So obviously interesting stories to tell down the pub, but also things that further you towards your quest. Look, this is a game, but it's more of an experience, really. And we had already said, look, we're going to play it until we're sick of it. As it was, Garth, you actually got to win.
I did.
And in this game, you pick a combination of destiny and story points that equal 20. The generic way is 10 of each, which is what we chose.
Yep.
And you actually got to 10 of each and then got back to Baghdad, had a successful encounter, and actually won the game.
Yeah.
And we did all that just over 2 hours, I'd say.
I reckon it was pretty close to, which is almost exactly what the playtime is. So considering that this was a learning game, because Leon and I certainly hadn't played it, and you hadn't played it for years and years
like
and years.
Yeah, like 5 or 6 years, probably hadn't touched it.
I think we did pretty well because this game, because it is so wide open, it's very hard to try and figure out a strategy for this game apart from going with what your quest is going to tell you to do. Because what I found really challenging about this game is those two potential scoring tracks, your destiny track and your story track. You've got no seemingly control over what your reward is going to be, because whenever you have an encounter, you will almost invariably get some reward, either a destiny point or two, or a story point or two, or an extra trait, or a something or other, or a treasure. But you've got no real control over that, which I find, how do you figure out which one you want to invest more of your points in so that you can say, okay, well, I want to try and make sure that I'm going to get, you know, 15 points out of my possible 20 on the destiny track, when it is completely a crapshoot as to how you're actually going to get those points.
Yeah, and I do have sort of a memory where back in the day where I did play it 3 or 4 times, I have a vague memory that the things that are more fantastical tended to give you more story points, whereas the things that did, like that used your skills, for example, tended to give you more destiny. So I think there was a way where if you thought, I'm going to go out and do some wild and crazy things, you might say, I'm going to go for 14 story points and 6 destiny points, maybe. But as I said, look, let's face it, it really is more of an experience than a game.
Not when you win, and I won. It wasn't about the experience at all. It was about those victory points.
Well, I could have won too, but I had to go to Mecca, and I had to please the annoying wizard wife that I had.
Your needy wizard wife.
Yeah, my needy wizard wife.
And that's one of the lovely things in this game is the statuses. So you get very statuses from your adventures, from ensorcelled to love-struck to
crippled
and wounded, imprisoned, lost. I mean, Garth won the game by spending the whole game lost, basically only being able to move one space at a time.
Yeah, you guys were travelling all around Arabia, and I got to go plod and stop. And then, for some of the game, I also had whatever the condition was called, which meant that I couldn't even choose where I went. You got to choose for me.
Oh, yes, fated and ensorcelled. And, you know, it's those combinations of statuses can be quite hilarious.
Yeah.
Leon visited the city of Leon.
I did.
And then became love-struck and then was cast aside by that suitor, but then ended up marrying a needy wizard, which meant every second turn he had to go back home to check in with the needy wizard husband.
Yeah, you are underselling it, though. I was seducing everything I come across. I was coming across Ettins and wizards and trolls, and they were all getting a slice of the charm.
Exactly.
And it did work some of the time.
So I guess this is yet another very story-driven game. Now, obviously, we've played Time Stories, or T-I-M-E stories, lately. We've clearly been playing Pandemic Legacy, another more story-driven game. Now we've played this one. How are you feeling about story-driven games, boys?
Well, I enjoy them because I think the experience far outweighs the end result, as long as it's worth it. And that's the thing with this game is I love opening up the book and the chapter and reading it. I think that's a really enjoyable collective experience. I find it a little bit infuriating that you can't really control the way that you're going to score those points. You've just got to sort of hope that you're going to have an outcome that's going to be suitable.
Is that the gamer in you, though, trying to strategize?
Of course it is. And I guess that's where you use your skills to try and determine what response you're going to have. So, you know, I'm fighting a wild beast. Oh, I've got, you know, this kind of skill that might help me, so I'm going to try and run away from it because I can hide well or whatever.
Yeah, or
so,
use weapon use because I can fight it.
Correct. All of that really adds to the story. And I think you said this, you know, when you were explaining it, is it would be super critical for the right group to be involved in any of these storytelling games. Because if you've got that person who's all just about the how do I win, how do I min-max this thing, they're not going to have a good time, and therefore the table's not going to. So,
I had to put on a Skeletor voice at one point. If I was actually thinking about how to win, that wouldn't have even cropped into my mind. But yeah, no, it's definitely a good game, and I think all these story games that seem to be becoming a lot more popular recently is a very good thing for the hobby, because there's many people out there, I know I count myself as one of them, that was always very interested in your role-playing games, your Dungeons & Dragons and stuff like that. But the level of entry to those games, unless you know somebody that's a good DM or knows the rules backwards or is a very creative person and can put that pen to paper to get that creativity out, can be very difficult. Whereas games like this and games like Time Stories, they fill that gap. And I think that's a very, very good thing. And I expect that from now on, we will see a lot more of them in the future.
Yeah, look, and I've said in the past, I've been craving some more role-playing experience. This does certainly help to fill that void. We've got a very engaging group here. Three was probably almost the perfect number for this game because you've got someone who's making the decisions, one person with the reaction matrices, one person with the book. So there was always something for everyone to do.
Yep.
So very little downtime. I think we had a lot of fun with it. It's not the sort of game you want to pull out every couple of weeks,
no.
But certainly, you know, once a year or something like that, it's a great, I'm glad I've got it in my collection.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the fact that we had three, which is only half the maximum number. I mean, I don't think I would enjoy this with six at all. I think the game would go from being 2 hours to 3 or 4 hours. And considering you're going to be spending half of all the turns with zero involvement whatsoever, I don't think it would be an enjoyable experience. So I think we really tapped it out at a nice round number there. Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, you could almost just, you wouldn't want to play it solo, but you'd just want to play it just to see how the story goes from the weird to the bizarre and how, you know, interacting with an elephant is going to give you a golden ring or something. How the hell do you know? It's just, look, good harmless fun.
Yeah.
I think you could actually probably get six to the table with this, but you'd want to base a night on it. You'd want to almost get the dinner party type of vibe going and then get this going, knowing that you're going to be playing it well into the night. And getting the booze flowing as well, I think, would definitely help with some of the situations in this as well. And another good thing is that we actually recorded this, so hopefully it will be up not too long after this episode is.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other things that we briefly recorded on video today, quite a short little filler game, Spit It Out, it's called. And Leon, you're going to give us a live example on air.
We are. We're going to play a game on air. Board game on air. That's just
this
beyond.
This is 2 weeks in a row.
It's just beyond excitement. The thing about this game that I really like is we get these filler games that are like, say, 10 to, say, half an hour that you normally play when you've got, you know, a small gap of time or between bigger games. Then you get your micro games like your Love Letter Week, which you can play in 5 minutes. This game, you could put on the table, and for a game that's, say, really, really long, you could play this during turns while people are taking ages or you're just waiting for somebody to come back from the fridge or the bathroom, because it literally takes 5 seconds, which is why we're going to play it right now. So Garth has got some cards for me.
Yep.
And what I'm going to do is roll two dice. You can hear them rattling around. I'm going to roll them, and I've got one and two. So the aim of this game is to lie. And to lie creatively, if somebody says, what is, say, a country in Africa, you want to lie and say, England. You can't lie something ridiculous and say, blue cheese rabbit, because that's not a country. It's just a delicious dish. So you've got to try and stay close to it. But the point of the dice is that now I know out of these six questions, the first two I have to get correct. And then after that, I have to lie.
Okay.
And now we're going to go from here. So I'm going to turn over the timer and Garth's going to read them out for me. Go.
Alrighty. Name a food that smells good.
Spaghetti.
Name a candy.
Chocolate.
Who fights in a war?
Hippies.
Name an act a magician would perform.
Filling out a census form.
What runs in your veins?
Fat.
And what do zombies eat?
Celery. I think I got 5 out of 6 there because the fat definitely runs through my veins. Yeah. Sadly. Not a lot of it.
How
but
did you not say chocolate? Oh my God.
Well, I think I said chocolate. I can't say it twice. And that's it. That's the game. There's a whole score pad with it, and it's one of these games that you can, like I said before, a few beers involved. This could be much fun to have by all, but
yep.
Or you could just use it for a few seconds, like we just did. And a game like this should be in everybody's arsenal.
Fantastic. So we have been playing so many games. Coming up, we're going to tell you about some games that are out there for you to buy via crowdfunding sources.
So that was AFI with 17 Crimes. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Leon,
yes.
Let me know how I need to spend my money.
Well, there's this little place called Kickstarter, and it has ruined my life in fabulous and lovely ways. So I'm going to tell you about some of the stuff that's on it now, because in the last few months there's been not a lot.
No, we've had a very quiet November, December, haven't we? But it's the new year.
Yeah, there's been a bit of an explosion of things on there. I normally, when I've done these in the past, have saved the bigger ones till late and then run out of time. So I'm not doing that this time. I'm getting straight into the ones I want to talk about. So the first one I want to talk about is Tiny Epic Western by Gamelin Games, the same guys who, funnily enough, did Tiny Epic Galaxies and Tiny Epic Kingdoms. Which are games that people are very, very interested in.
Yep.
And this is the new one that is a Western theme, of course. So it's poker meets worker placement set in the Old West. It plays in about 30 minutes for 2 to 4 players. Each player picks a boss character from your usual Western tropes, from your gunslinger to your lawman to your lady entertainer of the night, etc. And let's just leave that there.
Mm-hmm.
Each with their own special abilities and their own posses, which have little cowboy meeples, which is pretty cool. And you also have a bullet dice as well. So when you chuck dice for the jewels later, they are tiny little bullets, which is pretty cool. So you go to different locations to gain your resources, win influence, duel with your opponents, as I said. And on the way, you're trying to get yourself the best poker hand in the meantime. And as I said, it's pretty small, but it looks like much, much fun.
Yeah, and look, these series of games have got constantly really good feedback, really good scores, really good, constructive criticism.
Yeah.
It's all been very, very good. And look,
good word of mouth.
Yeah, and I mean, these guys are absolutely killing it.
And if people have never seen these tiny games, just give us an idea, Leon, how tiny is a tiny game?
Well, it can fit in your pocket. It's almost like it's a selling point of it, that you can fit it in your pocket. That's what they aim to do. They aim to do a game that you could very easily do on a big board and cost you $100 or so,
mm-hmm.
but do it in a little thing that you could fit. This is a very small game that you could fit in, like, so either in your pocket, or my wife has several games like this that sometimes if we're going out, she might chuck in her handbag or whatnot, because
yep.
you never know when it's going to come in handy.
Yeah.
So the actual Kickstarter itself, it comes with lots of cool little wooden pieces. All the stretch goals have been unlocked, so there's heaps of cool stuff. They've raised over $200,000. So there's a few people interested in it, and
yeah.
it's still going from strength to strength. To get the deluxe version to Australia is pretty much $50 on the dot,
yep.
Australian, which is nice. So, yeah, I have no problem with that whatsoever, and I am looking forward to
it. Well, yeah, the fact that they were going for a goal of 15,000 and they are now at 270,000+.
And only halfway through.
With, yeah, half the campaign to go. They're doing all right.
Yeah.
But they've also got a really good... story already of just fulfilling these on the right timeline
yeah.
and producing good quality, and the tiny epic, I guess, intellectual property now is a well-regarded one, so they're just going to have plenty of people who, like Leon, will have the Tiny Epic Galaxies,
yeah.
the Tiny Epic Western, and what's the other one? Quest? Tiny Epic?
There's Western, there's Kingdoms, there's Galaxy.
Kingdoms, yeah.
There's also another one called Tiny Epic Defenders,
okay.
which is... almost, I think, a slight blemish on their record, because I've not heard the greatest for that
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the other ones, but it's something I would still like to check out. I just haven't actually got my hands on it yet.
And okay. one of the things that, when we've talked to Kickstarter creators who've had multiple successes, obviously one of the great things they get is that flow-on effect of, oh, I remember these guys, they did a really good job. Yep, as soon as their thing pops up in Kickstarter, I'm going to jump on it. So
exactly.
Well done to Gamelin.
Yeah. Okay, and next we have the Manhattan Project Chain Reaction Card Game from Minion Games. It's a simple hand efficiency card game for 1 to 5 players. that uses dual-purpose cards in a quick and exciting race to be the first player to build the most bombs of utter destruction. Doesn't that fun? So during your turns, you will build mines and factories and universities. You'll even use espionage and double agents to fulfill your goal of gaining your resources to build these big old nasty bombs. And yeah. Sorry, I've lost my place completely on where I was looking at.
So it's a card version of the board game, The Manhattan Project,
yeah, which is,
I have really enjoyed. It's a worker placement game, quite lighthearted, where you're competitively building atom bombs, basically, and testing them in order to... You don't actually get to the stage of blowing up other people. It's just sort of the industrial race.
It's the arms race to it.
To build the bombs. Yeah, so this is a card version. Yeah.
Exactly right. And basically what you're doing is you've got cards that are multiple use. So again, you don't just use a card for one thing. You can use it to trigger a couple of different abilities. You're obviously trying to, basically get all the right components to be able to make things go boom.
Yeah, and a thing about this game which makes it interesting and different each time you play it is that every turn, I believe, all you keep are a couple of resources that are in this game. Everything else goes away. All the cards that are on the field, all the cards are in hand, all that, they go away, and then you're back in to roll the next turn, but you've got those resources so you can build cooler things.
Yeah.
This is also the same studio that made a game called Dead Men Tell No Tales, which came out last year, which got a lot of positive reviews, a game that I'm definitely looking to try and get my hands on sometime, hopefully this year. Again, it's a small game, and shipping to Australia is about $45, $50 to get the whole thing here, which is, relatively reasonable.
Exactly. And again, killing it, 55,000 of a $4,000 goal. It's only halfway through, so there's plenty of time to go, which is great.
Now, talking of Kickstarter,
we
couldn't go past this without giving a shout-out to our good friends at Grail Games.
Exactly.
David Harding and the team. They've got exciting news. Just recently launched a redesign of a classic Rainer Knizia game, Medici. It's a classic Euro auction game, was quite well known in its time, and one of those games that's really disappeared, first released in 95, so believe it or not, 21 years ago, that's a long time for Euro games. Leon, you were only just born then, but Grail Games, they can't seem to put a foot wrong. This is funding really well. I know it was more than halfway there after, I think, 2 days.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's 22 days to go, and it's only got to get $1,500 more.
Yeah.
It's gone for 15,000, it's got 13.5. Again, it's like a lot of their previous campaigns where they can only ship to certain parts of the world, which is the arrangement that they've arranged. But to have, again, Rainer there as your big name game designer to be able to publish this is really, really great signs for them. And I guess also it's a move into a larger game for them, because they've had their Mike line where they've had the 101 and Matcher and Elevensies and Cinderella's, too many Cinderella's.
Yeah, all the little games.
The little ones. And this is now a larger box game. They say it's about the same size as your standard Pandemic box, not the Legacy Pandemic, that one. So, again, it's around about $50, I think, for Australia, and that includes postage.
And the art on this looks an absolute cracker. It is by a very well-known board game artist, Vincent Dutray. When you see the cover of this, you'll think, I've seen lots of board games with that guy's art, clearly, because it looks quite familiar. Yep. Obviously, it's the medieval theme, but the art, the graphic design, the presentation of this is really sweet.
Exactly. So, I think Grail Games, again, they're onto a winner. This will fund. It's got 3 weeks to go, and it needs $1,500. So that's great to see another successful Australian Kickstarter.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well. There's a company that do some stuff on Kickstarter from time to time called Cool Mini or Not. You may have heard of them.
They do games with minis, don't they?
I believe so, and I believe that they are bought by the masses. Me being one of them.
But
I tell you what, this game I'm going to talk about, no minis whatsoever. Just some cool-looking pictures and whatnot.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I'm talking about Xenoshift Dreadmire, which is the second game in the Xenoshift series. So what you do is you will partner up with friends to survive horrific wave after wave of horrendous aliens in a cooperative deck-building base game for up to 4 players. So think Starship Troopers, the deck builder. And if you don't know what Starship Troopers is, what's wrong with you?
Would you like to know more?
Yeah, that's from the film, I get it. Anyway, yes, so as I said, it's a sequel to Xenoshift Onslaught, which came out last year and was very well received. This new game comes with new units, new items, new enemies. It can meld in with the base game or just be played by itself. The game takes place over 9 rounds, and they ramp up difficulty every 3 rounds, so you've got to try and upgrade your soldiers to fight off the waves as they get stronger and stronger. The story, like a lot of stories, is that you go to this deadly alien planet to mine and steal all their natural resources. Oh. So,
it's like Avatar.
There's never been a problem with that before.
Yeah, so who's the bad guys here? We don't really know. But one cool thing about this game that's a bit different than some other deck builders is that you can play cards in front of yourself on your turn, but you can also give cards to your partners around the table. So you can put cards in front of them when you know they're about to hit a particularly nasty wave and things of that nature, or they can give stuff back to you. So it is a true cooperative style of game. But the artwork for this is very similar to what Cool Mini or Not do with their minis. It's all cool and very, very metal, I would say. That's the best way I can describe it. Like, for instance, the first thing that they unlocked in their Kickstarter was the new boss character, the Corpse Puppeteer.
Aww. Which is just... sounds sweet.
You could just sew that on a jumper and give it to your grand, couldn't you? And I might just do it. Yeah, so the game to Australia, I think, is a little over $100. So it sounds like a bit, but for most deck-building games, that's about standard. And you get quite a lot in the base as well. I think I want to say 600 cards, so it's quite a lot.
And again, they've funded just astronomically, so it'll get all the stuff.
Any more super quick ones for us, Leon?
The Dice Tower, you may have heard of them. They've been around for 12 years. This is their fourth Kickstarter. The lads have raised, what was it when we checked earlier?
Basically almost $250,000.
And as well they should. We wish all the best to them. And people, if like promos, should get onto this, because there's lots and lots of cool ones. Stuff for King of Tokyo and Blood Rage and whatever else. And yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of stuff that you can find there on Kickstarter for them.
All right, your friendly neighborhood Dice Man will be back in a minute. Spoon, beef, baboon. Spidey. My pal. And Spider Pig, of course. That was Moxie Fruvius with their version of the Spider-Man soundtrack. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh, almost done for another Thursday. But we've got a few shout-outs to give, and we've been given a challenge, lads.
Yeah, we have. We've got this damn fangled 10x10 challenge that we've got to try and do, which is really hard. It's really hard because we play so many different games all the time. Trying to find 10 games that we can play 10 times in a year. How are we going to do that?
I'll tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to tweak it to our own style.
And we're going to change the goalposts.
Exactly, because that's just insanity. And we've got too many good new games to play and tell the nice listeners about.
Well, look, I had a quick look at my game shelf and realised I had at least 10 games that I haven't played yet, that I haven't got to the table, or that I've got my box finally that I games I haven't played for quite a long time and haven't at least played my version. So I certainly want to get 10 of those games to the table. That's what I'm going to do.
And are you going to be able to play them 10 times?
Oh, no way. I think I'll be satisfied with one time each, actually.
Yeah.
Well, some of them have been there for quite some time.
I reckon I can do Codenames 10 times. I can do Sushi Go 10 times. I can probably do Cube Quest 10 times.
And is that just tonight?
Yeah, I could do Tok Tok Woodsman 10 times.
Yes.
I could probably do K2 10 times because I'm playing it always on Board Game Arena.
Oh, yeah. Love Letter.
Yeah. So I reckon...
The list goes on.
Yeah, I could do this all in a day. But look, seriously, I think what we're going to do is we're going to have to actually spend a bit of time thinking about this, and we might just put it up on Facebook. We'll reply to the challenge in kind, saying this is what we're going to do. How's that sound, lads?
That sounds good.
Yeah?
Like a winner.
Excellent. So, look, there are a couple of things, because this is exciting con time in Australian gaming. Now, the first one that is coming up starts tomorrow, or, for those listening on podcast, Friday the 22nd through to Monday, which is CanCon, which is the lovely games convention in this nation's capital, which we would love to be at, but we're not.
One day.
So, yeah, that's happening... I don't know. If we win some money tonight, we can probably get on a plane and get there. But look, everyone who's everyone bar us is going to be there pretty much. And it's always just such a wonderful weekend of gaming.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll be able to have a chat with Terry and Merrin, who are our sort of semi-regular Canberra
correspondents,
and hear about how that all went. But there is also another one that's happening the weekend after in Katoomba called EttonCon. Yeah, so that's... It's only in its second year, which is obviously relatively new when you compare it to something that's been around a while. But it's great to have something so close to Sydney again.
Yeah.
Something that's still within the school holiday times, and obviously that's a time when a lot of people are off. And it's in Katoomba, which is a beautiful part of New South Wales, having grown up only a mere hour and a bit away from there, which is lovely. So, yeah, if you're not going to be busy on the 30th of January, make your way to Katoomba and the Lura Community Centre, and you'll be able to go and play plenty of games with those local Blue Mountains folk, which is lovely. We also have to talk about some competitions closer to home, which is that on the 30th of January, our great mates at Area 52 are hosting the Game of Thrones
Store Championship.
Yeah. They're also then backing it up on the next day with the Netrunner Championship, so everything gaming is happening there.
And speaking of competitions,
I think we're running one ourselves, aren't
we? What the what?
And a massive one we've been running for all the time. So our 12 games of Christmas competition is finally coming to an end. The entries will be closing on Australia Day. We've had lots and lots of great entries so far, but we're looking forward to getting a few more as the page grows, which we're very much excited about.
Yep.
And we're just looking to send as many good folk, as many good games as we can.
Exactly
and then,
right.
And then after this, since this has been so successful, I don't imagine this is going to be the end of this competition thing that we're doing.
No.
I think we're going to be powering on for this quite some time. So it pays to listen to us. Might be painful sometimes, but it works out in the end.
And look, a huge shout out to everyone who has, not just because of the competition, but because they love us so much, been sharing it around, been posting reviews on iTunes, been sending us pictures, because you might have noticed on Facebook, gents, we're closing in on 500 likes.
Wowee.
And who knows, maybe if we get to 500 likes, maybe we could find an excuse for another competition.
Oh my gosh.
What else do we need to tell people about?
Well, basically, I just want to say happy birthday to my niece, because it's her very first birthday today. She started walking a couple of days ago, which is pretty cool. But look, I just want everyone to keep sort of liking us on Facebook, because we are so close to 500. Following us on Twitter, because Twitter is where we send a lot of other photos that we just don't want to duplicate on Facebook. We now have an Instagram account that Mark is looking after single-handedly. I don't know the logins. You'll have to tell me about those later. But basically, we have just been putting out so much gaming goodness, which is hopefully what our people want to see.
And also, we did some more recording today.
Yeah.
So we recorded our session of Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Mm.
We're going to post that up. And look, I think if there is something that you think we could be doing that we're not doing, hit us up on the Facebooks, let us know, because, hey, you know, we're always playing games. If it's games you'd really like to hear our opinion of, if it is things you think that we could do maybe really well, I don't know. Who knows?
Let us know. Are you saying we're not perfect?
If there are things that you'd rather we don't do,
mm-hmm.
Let us know. We're just, you know, we're recording everything we can, sticking it out there, taking photos of it. Just share with all you good people out there.
Exactly right. Now, guys, we pretty much have to go because we've got more gaming. Leon, you are going to teach us Blood Rage.
Yes, and there will be ale flowing everywhere as well as the blood of my foes.
Excellent. Well, I think that's pretty much it. We've got so much more gaming to do over the next couple of hours. This time next week, we will be drawing our competition.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be pretty exciting. We've got to figure out how many games more than 12, or is it 12? Because I don't think we've figured that out yet. We have got so many games.
We've got at least 12, that's
for
sure.
At least 12, so that's exciting.
So you got to be in it to win it.
Yeah.
We will talk to you next week, get in the competition, and play lots more games.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.